Hey everyone, welcome back to the Monday edition of the Goody Reader Radio Show. My name is Michael, and of course I'm joined every Monday by Digital Book World's own Mr. Jeremy Greenfield. Jeremy, how is summer in New York treating you so far?
Beautiful here. Everyone should come.
It's been raining nonstop for weeks, and like yesterday it was like pouring rain like cats and dogs, and we don't really get much thunder and lightning here, but it was, you know, thunder and lightning like the Dickens.
Okay.
So I kind of like it because I kind of grew up in a town called Thunder Bay, ironically, and it's one of the cities that gets the most thunder and lightning in the world. And so
that's the name, right?
Yes. And so when I live here in Vancouver, I mean, it maybe thunders once a year. And so I always kind of get nostalgic whenever it happens. So Jeremy, let's first talk about Amazon. And Hachette had an Investors Day presentation come out publicly, although I don't know if they intended for this to happen, but it gives us a very cool introspective on how much Hachette depends on Amazon for their revenue. We have learned that 60% of their total ebook revenue comes from Amazon in the US, and in the UK, it's a staggering 78%. And we look at the other players in the game. Let's look at the US with Barnes & Noble. They only account for 19%. And Apple accounts for 13%, and everyone else, including Kobo, Google, Sony, account for 8%. Does this surprise you?
Not at all. This is, you know, it's not exactly the exact same numbers that you get from everywhere else, but it's pretty much in line with what we expect to see when we look at the market. I mean, Amazon has just been very, very successful at selling books and ebooks. And that's what you get when you're successful. You get big market share.
So when we look at the UK, the numbers are really staggering. I mean, 78% for Amazon. It's like 12% for Apple. Kobo has a meager 5%, and everyone else has 5% as well. Kind of shows you how the UK market is so Amazon-centric. You know, that's a huge gulf. And we can kind of infer a little bit that if Hachette, one of the biggest publishers in the world, I think they're probably the third largest publisher in the US, we can kind of infer that a lot of other publishers are probably seeing similar statistics. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely correct. I mean, with some variation here or there. I mean, you've got to remember that it varies from book to book. It varies from genre to genre. You know, Hachette has had a big sort of literary fiction hit with The Goldfinch last year. You know, HarperCollins, which had a big YA hit with Divergent, is going to have a different profile a little bit. But more or less, the numbers you're quoting are what we expect from these big publishers. And, you know, if you look at today's Publisher's Lunch and see the analysis that they did about profit margins outside of Hachette among larger publishers, you know, you're going to see that they all kind of sort of have a similar profile.
So did you hear about the new Amazon subscription service, the Amazon Prime Music?
Absolutely.
So I guess for those, it just came out. So basically, Amazon has started a Pandora, Spotify, Beats Audio, a competing service called Prime Music. So you have to be a Prime member, and I believe it's only available in the US right now. They seem to go more towards the curation route. You know, once a company has over a million tracks, and, you know, Beats and Spotify, I mean, they have 20 million tracks. It becomes overwhelming, and I find that the music scene in terms of streaming stuff is much akin to the publishing world, where curation is probably the biggest issue facing everyone. I mean, there's just so much content out there that how do you introduce people to new artists, new music, new books, and everyone has been wrestling with this for a number of years, as we've been documenting on both of our websites. So do you think that there's room in the streaming music industry for Amazon to come to the table?
Definitely. I mean, also consider that it's an add-on to the Prime membership. I mean, Amazon just announced that, hey, if you have a Prime membership, you're already paying for our music service, so, you know, go ahead and enjoy it. That absolutely Prime members will have that. And I think a lot of them will reconsider their Spotify subscriptions or their Beats subscriptions, should they have them, because now they're getting the same thing basically for free from Amazon. So, yes, I do think that there's room for more players in this world, especially ones like Amazon that kind of just, it reminds me a little bit of Scribd, what Scribd did when it launched its ebook subscription business. It already had this big audience, it already had a lot of users, and it kind of went to them and said, hey, by the way, we've also got this thing, and that makes room because it already has customers. It's not trying to develop a new brand.
Speaking of Scribd, there's a new German site. Well, actually, they've been around for a number of years, called Scooby or Scoby. Have you heard of them?
Mm-hmm. I believe it's called Scoob, yeah.
Okay. So they just signed a deal with Macmillan, and they're branching out of Germany to appeal to the UK and North American market. And apparently Macmillan contributed all titles under the Tor imprint. So I believe that there's about 2,200 titles for fantasy, sci-fi, you know, all the sort of quintessential Tor type of literary repertoire. Mm. So Do you think that, you know, that there's, you know, now that we talked about it, this is a room in the industry for Amazon, we hear a lot about, you know, Oyster and Scribd and all these other Netflix stuff for ebooks. Do you think that possibly this German site could successfully cross over?
You know, I think that there is room for more experimentation and players in the subscription ebook space, and I know that the current players will tell you that there are, because they don't know which one of them is going to survive yet, and they sort of want to plead their own case. But I do think there's room for more players. I don't know if there's room for more players, more profitable players. You know, I think we've seen the vertical subscription service work well, but we don't really know whether a general interest subscription service works well. Maybe Scoob turns into a verticalized service specializing in sci-fi and fantasy, which is really what Tor is all about. So I don't know if it means that there will be smaller, you know, profitable businesses in this, or there will be sort of just a couple of big players. But I do think that, you know, we're still seeing how things will shake out.
You know, I think that they were onto something by launching originally in Germany, because you look at a lot of the continental Europe, and there's really, you know, it seems as though that a lot of these ebook subscription sites just focus on the English world. So, you know, North America, and a lot of them are US only. You know, if you live outside the US, you can't even subscribe to the vast majority of them, Oyster and companies like that. So I kind of dig what this company is doing, because they started in Germany, and Macmillan's parent company is also based in Germany. So it kind of makes sense that Macmillan kind of was looking at the whole Netflix for ebook subscription service. And it's like, you know, everyone else is buying into it. You know, what should we buy into? And it's like, there's a homegrown solution right here. I think that instead of focusing on the US or North America, that they should focus on the often other neglected markets, you know, look at like France and Spain, you know, ebook markets that are slowly starting to gain momentum and to start coming into their own. I would say that they would probably have more success focusing on other markets closer to Germany than it is to kind of focus on a U.S. market, which is pretty competitive at this point.
Well, also consider that in the U.S. and the U.K., we've got this very established channel for buying ebooks. You know, we go on our Kindle, we go on our Nook, we go onto the internet, we buy our ebooks. But in other countries, that channel is not as established, first of all. And so it's up for grabs, you know, the way people consume ebooks. And second of all, you know, a lot of developing countries, people don't have the kind of money to spend $3, $4, $5, $6, $7, $10 on a single ebook. But they might be willing to pay $5 or $6 or $7 a month to have unlimited access to digital books, because that's more within what they can spend. And this might be a way that publishers and authors can extract more value from countries where they traditionally haven't been able to as much, and also give people in developing countries who don't have as much money to spend on media a way to consume some of the products that, you know, Western publishers are putting out.
Yeah, and I think the lack of funds in emerging markets is really driving up piracy. I remember writing a number of articles, and probably about the last year, looking at markets like the Philippines and Vietnam, Russia, and even into China and countries, even like Indonesia. And it's like, ebook sales account for less than 1% pretty well of publishers' revenues because everyone's pirating it because, publishers are wary to commit their catalogs to digital because they know that those books will get pirated. But you look at, say, like Vietnam, and I think it's like out of 64,000 published books in the last 5 years, 1,300 of them were ebooks. So that's a pretty significant gulf between the published books that are available in hardcover or softcover and the ones that are digital. So you have a lot of people that are scanning books, sort of what they do in Japan and Korea, where they do the scanalation, where they will scan manga or, scan those type of graphic novels and put them up because those graphic novels simply aren't available because the publishers aren't committing themselves to it. So it's almost like in these emerging markets, it's almost like the chicken before the egg. Publishers aren't contributing their titles to ebook form because they think that it'll automatically be pirated. So it's almost like the stagnated growth, in the industry. But I think the whole Netflix model works because it's impossible to pirate a book that comes just from an app. You have an app installed on Android or iOS or Windows, and everything's in the cloud. So you're not actually able to download that content to your computer. So I almost think that the whole Netflix for ebooks is almost like custom tailored for these emerging markets where, like you said, books get expensive. But if you could read unlimited books for a low monthly fee, suddenly that's a little bit more attractive.
Yeah, I would never say never on the piracy question, but I can tell you, having spoken to a lot of people who run these subscription ebook services, that they have tested the piracy issue very carefully. They have tried to break their DRM, and that's really one of the first questions that publishers ask when they're going to put a huge catalog of books available for people to look at without paying for them. And these services seem pretty confident that they've got the piracy question fairly well solved to the publisher satisfaction.
So, Jeremy, do you listen to audiobooks at all?
I don't really.
I listen to them very occasionally. I think I've probably listened to maybe three or four ever, and it's often like my favorite books. I bought the audiobook of Robopocalypse, which I guess came out a few years ago, which was all about sort of the robot uprising. And I think actually Steven Spielberg was optioned to direct this film, but it's not being done anytime soon. I got the audiobook edition of World War Z, that Max Brooks novel, and Ready Player One, which was probably one of my favorite books published, I guess, in the last 10 years, read by Wesley Crusher himself, Wil Wheaton. But the reason why I mentioned audiobooks is Amazon recently updated their iOS and Android app to be able to have Whisper Sync for voice and immersion reading. And these are two sort of platforms that will do wildly different things. So basically, if you have the ebook and audiobook, you could be reading the ebook, at night or during the day. Say you read from page 1 to page 29, and then you can actually listen to the audiobook, picking up right where you left off in the Kindle book. And immersion reading is basically, again, you have to have the ebook and the audiobook, but as you are reading the book, the audio edition will be playing at the same time, and it'll actually highlight the words in the Kindle book that are being read aloud in the audiobook. So stuff like this, perfect for kids, sort of that word audio correlation, but it's, good for students. It's good for people who are learning different languages to be able to have words highlighted as they're being spoken aloud and as you're reading them. I think that the thing that makes this interesting is that this technology has been firmly taken from the Audible standalone app and integrated into the Kindle app. So the Audible app really doesn't have any of this functionality in it. You basically buy and you listen to audio tracks within the Audible app, but suddenly all this cool, innovative stuff that only was on the Kindle Fire line of tablets before has suddenly crossed over to the official Amazon apps now. And it almost feels like Audible may, the future of a standalone app may be in jeopardy now, because if all the cool tech is going right to the Amazon, the Kindle official app, is there really room, do you think, Jeremy, for a dedicated Audible app, but then a Kindle app that basically does all the same stuff anyways?
Yeah, I do think there is room for that, because some people are just going to be wanting to listen to audiobooks, and they're used to using Audible, and they're going to continue to use Audible. You know, what I see this as more of is an innovation in giving people more of the way that they can consume books in the way they want to, rather than pushing them toward all using the Kindle app. I mean, you know, Amazon has some detractors in the publishing industry, and certainly now with this Amazon check conflict going on, some publishers are wary or angry at Amazon even. But you've got to hand it to the company, regardless of how you feel, that, you know, Amazon has made so many fantastic innovations in the way that we read. And this is just another one of them, where it kind of makes this sort of seamless reading digitally and listening experience that I'm sure a lot of users will find really delightful.
Well, here's my thoughts. If you look at audio, like audiobooks versus ebooks, in a lot of cases, the ebooks are between $3.99 and $9.99. You look at like the Goldfinch, that you can get the book for about $12.99 on Amazon. But if you want the audiobook, it's $29.99. But if you actually have the Kindle app with the new Audible stuff in it, you can actually buy, once you own the ebook, you can actually buy the audio edition at like a 78% discount. Same with like the Max Brooks book, World War Z. You can actually buy the Kindle version for $9.99, but if you're using the Audible app, it's actually $39.99. But if you use the Kindle app, you actually save 60%. If you already own the Kindle book, if you upgrade to the audiobook. And that's something that the Audible app doesn't do, but Amazon's doing this now within the Kindle app. So it's actually, you can't buy the books like as a bundle yet. And I thought that that would probably be the best move Amazon could make, is where you sell the ebook and the audiobook as a complete package, rather than you buy the ebook and then you get a prompt to upgrade to the audiobook. But Amazon within this app is the only company to do this, you know, and I think that that's probably one of the reasons why a standalone Audible app may be in jeopardy, because, you know, if you could buy the audiobook at like a 60 or 70 or sometimes an 80% discount within the Kindle app, you would be insane to just buy it at the regular price within the Audible app.
Well, Amazon has been unafraid, as so many successful companies have in the past couple of decades, to undercut its core business in search of finding something that works better, you know, before someone else does it. So this could be another example of that.
Yeah, and I know with Audible, they were one of the early adopters, even before Amazon bought them. When the iTunes like system originally launched on Mac and PC, its entire audiobook section was powered by Audible. And even now, today, if you have an iPhone or an iPad or any other, you know, Apple gadget, and you go to the audiobook section in, you know, the iTunes store, the entire audiobook catalog is actually sourced by Audible, and you will pay the full prices. So it seems as though that, you know, I think that the standalone Audible app may only be a few years, maybe less than a year before it's like discontinued, and just, you know, they have their distribution pipeline network all set up, and just everything else is just done right through the Kindle app. Because, it, you know, if you're an ebook reader or an audiobook listener, it makes sense to have one app that does everything than two apps that, like, will, you know, that basically will cannibalize each other. So one other thing I wanted to mention, did you hear about the Samsung product launch in New York last week?
Yeah, I did.
So this was a new line of Samsung tablets. I guess they released so many tablets that it's hard to be excited about them anymore. I think that this year they've released new phones, new tablets. As the year goes on, they're going to announce more stuff. It gets overwhelming. But I think the one takeaway from this is Samsung furtherly getting more content providers to sign agreements with them. A few months ago, or less than about a month ago, we saw a custom Kindle app made for Samsung. And if you're a Galaxy S5 owner, it actually comes with an app built by Amazon but made exclusively for Samsung smartphones called Kindle for Samsung. And what Amazon is doing is they're giving away a free ebook every single month. So they had three titles to choose from. You can pick one of those titles and they're available for free. Samsung is just signed a relationship with Marvel in order to provide unlimited comic books for 3 months with this new tablet line. So part of like the allure is that if you buy this, you get like you can read unlimited comic books. And I think they've done similar arrangements with like Condé Nast for magazines and things like that. I'm starting to see a trend here, Jeremy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're starting to see almost like a marriage between the people that do hardware and the content providers saying, buy our device, you get all this stuff free. And they're sort of piggybacking companies like Amazon or Marvel rather than developing their own in-house solution, which we all know that Samsung just canceled the Reader's Hub. They kicked Kobo out of their ecosystem. Samsung had their own bookstore. That's going away. We're not seeing press reader on any of their tablets anymore to read digital magazines. It seems as though that Samsung's canceled all their, they basically scrapped their entire ecosystem and starting anew. What do you?
Well, those, OEM, original equipment manufacturer built ecosystems have just never been successful. I can't think of a single one that's been very successful. And everyone was excited when Samsung was announcing that it might get into the ebook business or when Samsung was talking about it. But I don't think anyone really considered the history of that, those kinds of efforts. If you look at the way these content businesses have gone, it's been all content distribution and creation companies that have been the winners here in terms of owning the customer, rather than the equipment manufacturers. The only exception, of course, is Apple. But I'd consider Apple somewhat of a hybrid there because, it syndicates its software and its distribution model onto a lot of equipment that it didn't sell.
Yeah, I can't really think of a proprietary in-house stuff that actually worked, like the Samsung App Store. When have you ever heard about that? Or look even at Barnes and Noble on their tablets with their own app store. It kind of went the way of the dodo because people were just not, just a crappy catalog of apps. No one was really using it. And then Barnes and Noble adopted Google Play, and then suddenly everyone was buying the tablets because it was a better ecosystem. But yeah, this is sort of the pitfalls of when an OEM or a hardware company tries to start their own service instead of licensing it out because they can never fully concentrate on it. If you're, say, Jeremy, you launch a tablet and you're like, I'm going to start an ebook store, I'm going to start a magazine store, but I also have to advertise and make the tablets and do a big PR campaign. How much of your effort is on selling tablets versus like your efforts on developing an awesome ebook system and courting publishers and doing this, that, and the other thing? I find that a lot of these big companies, their perspective gets skewed, because they can't fully concentrate on all of these things, and so most of them suffer and end up like wallowing away into obscurity because it just they have to focus on the things that are making them money, and it's selling hardware and getting more retail partnerships that are going to be able to do that. So we've talked about a number of things today. Do you have any final thoughts?
I was really happy with what happened at the ebook subscription debate last week. Many, many, many people attended it. I think we had almost 400 people registered for it. And I will spoil it for all the listeners. The side arguing against the success of ebook subscription services being good for authors, publishers, and readers. One, now many more people, roughly 3-1 actually, agreed with the statement at the end of the day, but the other team changed the most minds. They were more convincing than the other team in aggregate. And that's what we measured, and it was a great debate. And you should be able to listen to a recording of it at Digital Book World in the not too distant future.
Were you surprised by any of the key points that were made during the debate, either for or against ebook subscription sites?
You know, not really. I've been living and breathing this for a couple of months now, and sort of working with both teams. Not telling them what to say, obviously, but practicing with them and sort of just making sure that they were ready. So I've sort of heard it all when it comes to ebook subscription services these days.
All right. Well, I encourage everyone to check that out. And in this edition of the radio show, we'll put a link there so you could, when it goes back up, I guess we'll have a link to the audio recording so you guys can check that out. We will be at Goody Reader at the American Library Association annual conference. We'll be there from the 26th to the 29th. So if you're involved in the library space, you want to see what cool new tech or what type of things are kind of the Library Association is really thinking about. You know, we don't often hear about libraries' digital strategies. So we're going to kind of make it a point to find out versus the U.S., Canada, and abroad, sort of what the challenges are in the library industry right now with ebook adoption. Because even like last year when I went to the big ALA conference in Chicago, everyone was still lamenting that all the publishers weren't on board, you know, contributing their catalogs to libraries. And there was a lot of resentment between the libraries and the publishers saying, you know, why aren't you contributing your books? We're not devaluing it. You know, tangible books aren't being devalued. Ebooks are no different. But now almost like every major publisher is involved in the library space. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what other challenges are facing them now that they don't sort of have the whipping boy, as it were, about select publishers not contributing their titles. So we'll check that out for trends and analysis, and we'll talk to a lot of the ebook providers there and give you guys a good introspective on the current state of affairs on the digital library system in Canada and the U.S. So you've been listening to the Goody Reader Radio Show with Michael Kozlowski and Jeremy Greenfield. Everybody take care.